Kalim, Perik Beis, Mishnah Aleph 2:1. From now, really, for the next 9 prakim, we'll be focusing on kli cheres, utensils made out of clay, fired clay. This first Mishnah here will contrast the basic rules of what makes a earthenware utensil susceptible to tumah from other kalim. Again, you recall that a kli is some kind of utensil made by human beings for the purpose primarily of holding things. We'll see about that in a moment. And for a kli to be makabel tumah, it has to be made of one of these 8 industrial materials. And if it's made from, let's say, stone, which isn't on the list, so that it's not makabel tumah ever. But if it's a kli eitz, says the Mishnah, or a kli or, kli etzem, or kli zchuchis, these 4 materials, eitz is literally wood. It means anything that grows essentially from the ground, including, say, bamboo or leaves and that kind of thing. Kli or means leather, animal hide. We're referring specifically to animals, terrestrial animals, meaning not fish, sea creatures, and also not birds. Kli etzem, utensils made from bone, but really any of the hard parts of an animal. That would include, let's say, like the horns or the hoofs, etc. Uchli zechuchis, and also glass utensils. Glass is only makabel tumah, and a kli that is created from glass, I should say, is only makabel tumah. Midirabban. Midirais is no mention of glass in the Torah anywhere. Chazal said utensils were made by glass in this time already, in the time of the Mishnaic period, and glass is made from essentially heating or melting sand, so it's kind of like clay in some ways, comes from like dirt, and therefore they made it makabel tumah midirabban. So those 4 utensils, pshutein tahorim, if they are flat and they have no base kibul, no receptacle in which they were built in such a way to store or hold something, so then they are tahorim, they are tahor. That means they are tumah impervious. So if a dead rat is sitting on a flat piece of glass, which you use essentially as like a whiteboard or something, or your charcuterie board out of wood that you serve your cheese on, if it's just flat, it's not makabel tumah. And if you have a nida touching it, or a dead rat touching it, or a dead body on it, it simply is not makabel tumah. It's still tahor. Okay? Umekablehem tameim. However, if the utensil has a base kibul, a receptacle built in, like for example, let's say your charcuterie board that's for serving your, the flat wooden board that's for serving your cheese has a nice little indent where you can keep your salt, your condiments, something, and you could, it'll hold the salt in that indention inside the wood. It's carved out of the wood. That's the base kibul, the receptacle, and such a utensil would be yes tumah susceptible. So when you say here mekablehem, we mean the kind of utensils that have the ability to be mekabel, to receive something, to hold something in its base kibul, in its receptacle. When it says tamein, what that means, and this is true throughout the entire Masechta, it means it is susceptible to tumah. Just because something is tamei in the Mishnah doesn't mean it actually is currently in has a state of tumah and would convey tumah, let's say, to truma or something. Not necessarily. When it says tamein, it means it could, in theory, become tamei. It's tumah susceptible. As opposed to tahor, which means it's simply not tumah susceptible, which means, like I said before, it simply cannot become tamei. So the point is that utensils made out of these 4 materials are susceptible to tumah, provided that they have a base kibul. Nishbaru, if one of these kind of utensils break, so you have a wooden chest, okay, and the chest falls on the back of the truck and it breaks into pieces and no longer can function as a chest anymore because it's a broken piece of wood, then taheru, the tumah dissipates, it becomes tahor. So this wooden chest, let's say it had inside, for argument's sake, a dead dog, that's a novella, the whole chest is now tame, and if the chest would come into contact with the truma would become invalidated, but it would become puzzle, and tame, in fact. So if that wooden chest falls off the back of the truck and it breaks into pieces, it can't work as a chest anymore, the tumah dissipates, and now if that wood touches truma, the truma remains tahor. If you then take the broken wood and you say glue it back together, either to make a new utensil or even the very same identical old utensil, just you put it back together again, mekablin tumah. So then, yes, of course, now the reconstituted or rebuilt or new utensil is once again tumah susceptible, but only mekanu lahaba, from now onwards, meaning it currently, even though you've rebuilt the old, let's say, chest, the tumah dissipated and the tumah does not come back. So it's tahor, but it can become tamei once again, only from now that it once again is functional as a utensil, as a storage container, let's say. Okay. Now, in contrast to all of that, kli cheres ukli neser, utensils that are made out of essentially like dirt. So cheres is, and we'll translate this as earthenware. It's really, they're identical in terms of halachically identical, cheres and neser. Cheres essentially means clay. So you basically take this kind of sticky brown dirt, we'll call it, and you put it together, wet it, put it together, make it in the shape of a pot, and then put it in the kiln, the fire in the oven, and it becomes hardened. Neser, essentially, we'll call it as white dirt or light-colored dirt. Exactly what Neser is a three of machlokas and the Mefarshim. It's not clear at all. What the difference is actually called neter or alum, or if it's chalk. Whatever it is, the point is, essentially, it's kind of like a white powder or light-colored powder, which you can push together and like fire lightly and make like into a utensil. It seems to have not been, whatever neter is, doesn't seem very durable because there's no obvious remains of clay neter lying around today in like, you know, archaeological museums or in archaeological sites and so on. So whatever it is, it kind of probably like, I guess, got reabsorbed into the ground. It sort of, maybe it dissolves in water and that kind of thing. I don't know. Okay. But a clay cheres and clay neter, these are earthenware utensils. So they are different. Tumas on shava, their tumas the same one to the other, meaning cheres and neter kelim are the same halachas, but they contrast with what we said before. Mitamin umitamin ba'avir. They both receive their tumah and convey tumah from their inner airspace. So just what that means. First of all, let me just say what the words themselves mean. It means you have a ceramic cup. Okay? It's made out of fire clay. So it receives tumah through its airspace, meaning if you take a dead rat and you dangle it by its tail in the airspace of the cup, inside the cup, but doesn't touch the cup becomes tummy. And similarly, if you then now go and take a piece of truma and you dangle it in the airspace of the cup without touching it, the truma will become tummy. You see, so the point is the airspace, without touching the physical container, is the way by which it receives tumah and also conveys tumah in that same way. The truth is, once it is tameh, it will convey tumah from the outside as well, direct contact. But to receive tumah, the only way that a kli cheres receives tumah is through its airspace within it. It's based on a pasuk. Here in the Mishnah refers to it as the avir, the air. But because of the lashon of the pasuk, elsewhere it'll be referred to it throughout the Mishnah. It says it's toch, its inner cavity, okay, the airspace within it. But don't confuse the base kibul with the toch. They're not the same thing. Base kibul means structurally, this utensil was designed in a way that it had a receptacle which was intended to hold things. That's a base kibul. The toch is just the inner cavity of the kli cheres, and that inner cavity, the inner airspace, that is where the tumah is, you know, by which it's received. Now there's a sort of a Hebrew challenge here, a grammatical challenge here, which is that in normal circumstances, the word to receive tumah and to convey tumah, if you take away the vowels, is the same. It's just mitamin, mem, tet, mem, aleph, mitame or mitamin, you know, if it's plural. Conveniently, the very first time here in our Mishnah, it says mis-tamin, in other words, it's a mem, and then a tuf, and then a tet. Mit-tamin, if you say it like Sephardi with a tuf instead of a suf. Now, of course, that tuf there is because the structure is called a hitpael or hispael, meaning reflexive. So it meaning like the same way it happens to it, like you dress yourself, you're hit labesh, mit labesh. So mit labesh to dress yourself, mit tamin to become yourself tummy. Okay, as opposed to mit tamin with the shva under the mem, that means to convey tumah. This, of course, is very confusing for non-native Hebrew speakers. It even sounds same. Mit tamin and mit tamin sounds very darn similar. And more challenging yet is that the old Mishnayos once upon a time didn't even have vowels inside them at all. Therefore, you couldn't tell which one you mean. Do you mean to receive tumah or convey tumah? And they're like the Rambam, for example, reads this the next line of this Mishnah differently, where he understands it's referring to a shvan, not a chirik, meaning it's referring to like receiving as opposed to conveying as opposed to receiving tumah. Okay, so you see right away, it's a challenge. In any case, here it says mit tamin, it becomes tameh, the kli cheres does through its toch, and mit tamin, it conveys tumah ba'avir through its airspace. Umit tamin me'acharehen. It also, now, according to the way the Bartonur learns, it says the achorehen is the underside. So think of like, you know, oftentimes you have, say, silver cups, like Kiddush cups that have like on a pedestal, they have like a bottom. So if you, the cup, of course, you fill it up, you can fill the wine in the main receptacle. But if you turn the cup upside down, there's sort of like an upside, if you hold it upside down, there's also a receptacle underneath the cup where you could pour something there too if you wanted to. In the time of the Mishnah, they made, you know, they were poor, they made use of all their utensils, and the thought was that, although normally people don't keep things in the underside receptacle, and that's not what it was intended for, but they do from time to time, You know, just because they needed a place to put something, for argument's sake. And therefore, and they don't, let's say, to get wine on it. Who knows? So the bartender learns that midderabanan, the rabbis made the underside cavity, the achareian, also a place where tumma can be received. Midderabanan. However, he's going to learn, the bartender's going to learn that it's only there, it only works. I mean, the tumma is only conveyed to the cup if the dead rat, or whatever it is, touches the inside surface, not just simply from the airspace. And the reason for that is because we want to differentiate between the derais and the derabanan. Okay? The Rambam, in fact, learns that no, the underside cavity actually does nothing at all. It's not tumma susceptible, just like the outside. So here the Mishnah says, ve'enan mitamin megabehen, a kli cheres does not receive tumma from its gav. Gav means it's outside, the outer surface. So if a dead rat touches the outside of the cup remains tahor. Okay, the Rambam learns that that's going to be true also from the underside, inside, like under the pedestal, whereas the bartender says midrabanan would become tummy. Okay, so, but just clearly understand, we have three parts to the cup, let's call it. We have the toch, or the avir, the inside, the gav, the outside, and the achoraim, the achora, which would be the underneath, the underside cavity, if that has halachic significance or not, machlokas. Called the Bartanur and the Rambam. Ushvirasan hitarasan. The way in which you tamitaher, you remove the tumma from a klicheres, or klineser for that matter, is to break it. The truth is, like I said before, any utensil that's broken, that it can't serve its original function, loses its tumma. So there's no difference in truth between like a wooden kli and a earthenware kli. The difference is that when it comes to other utensils, ones made out of metal or glass or wood, so you have another option. You could put them in a mikvah and make them tahor. Whereas when it comes to kli cheres and kli neter, you cannot be metahar them. You can't purify them, removing the tumah, by putting them in a mikvah. Mikvah just simply doesn't work for those utensils, for those kli cheres utensils. The only way to be metahar, to remove the tumah from the earth, the clay, the fired clay, is to smash it, to break it. Okay? For that reason, all utensils other than earthenware utensils are referred to as kli shetef. I don't know, rinsing, immersing vessels, because you can be metahar them, you can purify them, removing the tumah by immersing them in a mikvah, but not a earthenware vessel, not a kli cheres or kli neter. Those cannot be purified in a mikvah, only shvirasan hitarasan. If you want to be metahar them, your only option is to break them.